passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back. Pat Smith joins us in a couple of minutes. We'll get the latest from Alabama as the biggest game of the year looms in the front mirror. Let's get back to the calls. Cat Daddy is next.
Big Paul looking good and sounding good as always. Now, I'm probably going to upset you, but I agree with one thing that Dabo said, and that's spewing. From what the lip stove, people come in the liquor store telling me, that is a regular call at the end of the show, and he and Dabo have had spats before. But the thing he said was, where are the adults in this country? And as we look at the attack that happened on Israel and all the things that's going on in this world, he was right about that. And I ask, where are the adults in this country? And that's why I agree with Dabo Swinney. Lord, forgive me for that, but I had to do it. It's the truth.
Trey is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, you remember last week I told you I'd write me a book and the title was called Quitter Gems? You remember me telling you that?
I do.
Well, after yesterday's phone calls, I started on my first chapter last night, and I'm calling it Dabo 2.0, and I'm just going by what things were said about Dabo, and they were by this certain caller. Thin skin. Can't take criticism, very insecure, gets mad very easily. And then he even brought up that, you know, Dabo and some others, when they get pulled over, they go out places and people don't recognize who they are. They get all offended and they say, well, you don't know who I am. But, you know, Jim got all offended when Augie didn't, when Augie was imitating the callers. Jim got all offended, so he didn't recognize them. So that's my first chapter, because if you look at it, if this guy would look in the mirror, he'd see two clowns tearing at himself, or either Dabo 2.0. But getting to a more serious conversation, Paul, I want to talk to you about coaches lobbying for their teams. You know, Saban got criticized, baby, whining, crying, lobbying, whatever you want to call it. In 2018, Kirby did the same thing. We know Urban's done it. Just here recently, Steve Sarkisian come out, and he's lobbying as the best one-loss team because he's got the best win in the country. Kirby come out and said that he thinks all SEC teams should be ranked. Paul, me personally, I don't care if a coach lobbies for his team, because you got 13 people in there voting. And we don't know how close the voting is. If you can change one person's mind, it might get you in the playoffs. And I was just wondering what you thought about that and how you feel about coaches lobbying for their teams to get in the playoffs. And I hope you have a great day, and I'll keep working on my book. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with people lobbying. I think it's really what they say when they lobby. Yeah, I think that was where the criticism came last year. Jim is up next.
So Trey's going to write a book about me? Is that what he's going to do?
I think so, yes.
Well, I tell you, you know what, Paul? I'll be honest with you. I need a good lawsuit, because I know he's not – that's the problem, though. He ain't got no money. All he does is get in trouble and get blood clots and want people to even ask me to pray for him. Then after he gets well, he thinks everything's cool and God's going to take care of him. You better watch your mouth, Trey. God doesn't like hypocrites. I know that. I know I've not got no room to talk. But you're running your little mouth about me, and you're out of line. You're no better than Dabo Swinney. You're rotten, and you're an imp. You're a little pimp. You're what we call it on the football field. You're a That's all you are, Trey.
I think the censor got to him. Wow. Gary is in Wyoming. Hello, Gary.
Paul, you still there?
I think so. I barely.
Hey, I saw you on First Take this morning. I thought you did an excellent job.
Thank you.
Two things. Stephen A. had mentioned it doesn't matter where the top four are at. You know, you know, as well as I do, as the season progresses, it does matter. And I think that one way that Michigan, or that they might try to do something with this if they don't step forward, is put Michigan at number four and bounce them at the last minute because of their performance. I don't know what you think of that. But
here's the problem, though, and let me lay it out. If Michigan stays undefeated and the remaining games are Penn State, Ohio State, in a Big Ten championship game, which will be a walkover considering the other side of the Big Ten, they could probably – I don't think they'll be any lower than second or third or maybe first, because they will have so many – I mean, Ohio State could be number – well, they are number one, so – whether if that right. holds up, then Michigan would have a win over Ohio State. You can't do any better than that.
Yeah, it's just you never can tell. You know, I mean, they go there to spy on Central Michigan, and you know, I was watching you this morning, and I wondered, well, maybe he was thinking about years gone by in Appalachian State or something. Why would you have such a good team? Kids that stayed around that could have went into the draft.
What you're doing there is, was it Central Michigan and Michigan State? So probably you're trying to get information on Michigan State. Are you not? Did Michigan play CMU this year? I don't know. Yeah, so that would be State. And wasn't Jim McElwain? Wasn't he on Harbaugh's staff one year? I'm trying to remember. I think he was. So he would. He gave a fairly pointed answer after the game. The real interesting story I read today was by Bruce Feldman in the Athletic. Yeah, he was on Harbaugh's staff. By Bruce Feldman of the Athletic, he and one of his colleagues interviewed about 50 coaches, and I would say 75 or 80% believe this is beyond the pale. This isn't sign stealing. I mean, this is going way beyond that.
Beyond.
And could you imagine? And I've had coaches tell me that it helps. I mean, I know you have to still stop the other guy, but it's a significant advantage if you know what they're doing.
Can you imagine being a player for Michigan and having maybe one of the best teams that Michigan's ever had in their entire history?
No, Gary, I agree. I mean, and by the way, they would still be ranked. There's not a game they played this year that they would have been in danger of losing or within 20 points had they not done
this. Some of these kids stuck around just for this very reason.
Oh, yeah. No,
and
I
sure as hell am not a Michigan fan, but I do feel sorry for the kids because I don't see them getting – they're not going to be waving the championship banner. There's no way. I just don't believe it.
Well,
there's too
what
much,
I tried there's, to say today, Gary, I don't know which – yeah, I don't think – I may not have said it on that show, but – I mean, this thing is, until somebody addresses it, it is going to be like a forest fire out of control. And, you know, the CFP answer was prosaic. I mean, you knew that was coming. But don't tell me the school can't address this.
Exactly.
Maybe they can't talk with a degree of specificity to the investigation, but they can address it. They can send legal counsel out there and issue more than a tepid denial, and that's all they've done so far.
Well, how about a team meeting where they start worrying about the players' performance and what's going on, and they know that they're playing with all of this hanging over their heads possibly. They've got one way or another, they're going to have to say something. If not to the general public, they're going to have to at least address the team.
And I think the most interesting part is that the athletic director is on that CFP committee, and you know he's spending 2 days, 3 days every weekend with all these other guys, and don't tell me they're not talking to him. And they all have similar issues, and that's going to be very revealing. Hey, thank you so much for the call. We do appreciate it. Rattlejaw is in South Carolina. Hello, Rattle.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I would like to, first off, I am a Georgia Bulldog fan, have been all of my life, even though I do live in South Carolina. But I was disappointed that the Dogs didn't stay number one, but I'm not surprised. I think it gives Kirby motivation and the team motivation just to play harder and be ready to to do better. Now, to Dabo, I listened to what all he had to say. And I think a lot of the issues with Dabo is Dabo is frustrated with what's going on with his team right now. He's on the defensive. And when I listened to what he had to say, I didn't really find any issue other than being a Power Five coach. He probably shouldn't have said what he said, and he knew better. But Paul, do you think maybe he's disappointed that Saban's not going to retire and he's not going to get that job, and that's what he thought was going to happen this year?
Well, I don't think that's the motivating overriding factor, but I think, you know, he's got to think. I had Deshaun Watson. I had Taz Boyd before him. I had Trevor. And even these other two quarterbacks, they were both the top quarterback in the country. I mean, and clearly something is wrong. It has to be frustrating when you have had a program as good as his program. And, you know, he's been in the playoffs, what, five or six times, played for the championship four times, won it twice. I mean, that's – he is right about being up there with the greats of all time in terms of the success. And then you start losing games to NC State and to Duke. I mean, it has to be mind-boggling. And it shows you how quickly the bottom falls out. And I think it also shows how great Saban's run has been, because in Saban's worst year, last year was like the worst year, and they still finished in the top five in the country. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. We will head to Alabama in a few minutes for an update from there. Fox is in Louisiana. Hello, Fox.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. I'm just going to tell you I'm a big fan of yours and a old LSU fan, and I'm going to forgive you for what you did Monday. You had the gall to bring up that 2011 game. You know, we went to Tuscaloosa and we put up twice as many points as Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And then for the game of the century, you mentioned you and Urban Meyer was watching, is the most humiliating we ever had.
Yeah, that was really, I've never seen a game with such emotion, and LSU wins that game in Tuscaloosa and has to play Alabama again in New Orleans, of all places, and just lays one of the biggest eggs I've ever seen.
I think it was the worst one. We try not to even think about it.
And what was interesting is that LSU came back the next year. I think it got worse, in fact, Fox. I'll never forget the next year. I think LSU started number one. And I remember standing on the sidelines of Tiger Stadium. And you remember that? I hate to bring another bad memory up. But I think LSU was driving and may have had a penalty. I can't remember. And missed a field goal that would have put the game away. And then that swing pass from, was it T.J. Yeldon? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, A.J. McCarron.
Pick six.
The guy ran. No, it wasn't a pick six. It was about a 70-yard touchdown. Yeldon literally ran right past me into the end zone. And that place, I genuinely felt badly for LSU fans. I mean, that was one of the most gut. I mean, here you have Les Miles on the possibility of winning three straight against Saban and completely changing the dynamics. And he ends up losing the rematch and then loses a game at home. And it spiraled out of control after that.
That was brutal. He made a great mid-game adjustment and stood running over the right guard. We tried the left guard.
Right.
No. And Alabama probably had one of the best defenses that year. They had a great defense. And now we're stuck with, look what happened at Ole Miss when we put up and can't win.
Yeah,
that's awful.
Never happened.
What happened to our defense?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. The last year of Ogeron was seriously challenged. And
yes, sir.
And I think, you know, as good a job as Brian Kelly has done, it's I mean, he never fails to mention when we talk to him that He doesn't think that program is quite there yet, and they're not. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Miss Pat is up next.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for talking to me. I wanted to say I thought Augie's impersonations yesterday were hilarious.
They were
good. Even I could pick out most of them. My call, though, I want to read you something from Merriam-Webster's dictionary, if you'll just bear with me for a minute. Okay. They act as if the world revolves around them. They have an inflated sense of importance and entitlement. They need to be the center of attention and require endless praise. You must compliment them to get their approval. They can be extremely intuitive, but they use your intuition to manipulate and achieve their goals. They have little or no capacity for unconditional love. If you don't do things their way, or if you disagree with them, they become ice cold and punishing, withhold love, or give you the silent treatment. So, you know, you probably can't say who that describes, but I think we all know.
I'm just going to laugh.
And this is in response to Trey's call.
I don't want to have to answer this.
I know you don't have to answer it, but I just wanted to put my two cents in, Paul.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Equalizer in North Carolina.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing today?
We are doing well. Thanks so much.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two things, and I hope you'll give me just a little bit of time. First, I want to, from my heart, tell you how much I appreciate how you treat the younger callers on the show. The kids that are 7 or 8 years old or 13 years old, I just remember one of my uncles always talked to me like an adult and listened to what I had to say. And I just think you're phenomenal at that.
Thank you very much.
And that really tugs at my heart. And I thank you so much for that. The other thing I wanted to, I've called them before and talked about the transfer portal. And I'm really confused right now as to the impact. 247 Sports has a transfer portal ranking. And what they do is they look at how many commits you get in, how many stars, and they rank it. And it's really interesting if you look at some of the top teams. So out of, 130 some FBS colleges, Georgia's 55, Alabama's ranked 53, Penn State is 52, Texas is 48, Washington is 46. So that's just some top teams that are near the middle of the ranking, and Notre Dame's in there as well. But when you go to number one, it's Colorado with 51 transfer portal commits. To me, I think I've sort of changed my tune, Paul. I thought the transfer portal was the answer, and now I'm thinking it's maybe not, that it is really hard to integrate all these tens of new players onto your team. And I think some of the Georgias and Alabamas and Washingtons of the world are showing that it's different. Keeping people, recruiting well, keeping those recruits in seems to me to be the better approach. I wondered your thoughts on that.
I think that is a tremendous challenge. And I think you can take a few, and if you look at the successful programs, they don't take large quantities. They fill in where they feel the most comfortable. But anytime you add that many people to anything, whether it's a business operation, a military unit, or a college football team, you're dealing with so many personalities, and there's a reason why every one of those guys wanted to leave. And a lot of times it's not a great reason either, other than they're unhappy where they are, and they're looking for something that they haven't gotten. It occasionally works
right
out, but rarely does it. Hey, thank you for the call. We head to the break. We have a fantastic guest coming up, Pat Smith. You know the background on Pat. We'll introduce him to you when we return.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Great. When we get to be reunited with Pat Smith, who played the critical role in the formation of the Feinbaum Show many years ago in Birmingham, and of course, co-hosts the three-man front that comes on right before us on WJO. Pat, thank you for hopping on board. I have to start with the Dabo Swinney thing. He's a favorite son, or at least was, in Birmingham growing up just south of the city in Pelham. What's been the reaction to the guy that many at one time thought would be Nick Saban's replacement?
Well, I'll tell you, the number of losses that he has stacked up this year, you can go ahead and mark him off that list of replacing Nick Saban. But I will tell you this, it was overwhelmingly supportive of Dabo in the way that he came after Tyler from Spartanburg. Kind of remind me of the old Feinbaum days when you used to go after callers before he got all corporate on us. But no, seriously, Paul, the defense of him has been something that surprised even me. Just the fact that so many people said, yeah, I said Dabo was right what he said. And, yeah, it's good to see a coach stand up for his program. So most people in these neck of the woods, they defended him.
Yeah, Pat, we're trying to get a hold of Tyler right now. He if you put Tyler back in the embryonic days of the Feinbaum show, I mean, he would be a serious candidate for caller of the year.
There is no doubt about it, and we'd probably give him InfoBabe Award too, just for just the fact that he was so good on the air. But yeah, absolutely, he was fantastic.
Pat, why not Dabo though? In terms of what you said, because if you go back maybe 8 or 9 years, I mean, he seemed like the guy that would take Saban's place. What's the rub against him by Alabama people?
Transfer portal, NIL. The fact that he has played in a terrible conference and he hasn't been able to take advantage of that and get more national championships, that's just to name a few, Paul. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that's why he's no longer on that 1A list. I mean, I hear more people talk about Dan Lanning than anybody else. It's not Mario Cristobal. It's not Dabo. It's not anybody else. It's Dan Lanning. But that's why. It's the fact that he has not taken advantage of a weak ACC. Many people believe that he should have won a whole lot more than what he has. And so, yeah, I mean, most people in Birmingham still respect Dabo, think Dabo's still a good coach. But as far as replacing Nick Saban, that is way down the list these days.
Wow, interesting. And, of course, Saban, having turned 72 yesterday, showing no signs of stepping away. And how bizarre has this season been where we go back to the middle of September, we talk to you, and things were literally coming apart. What has Nick Saban done to calm the waters, at least until 6:45 Saturday night?
Well, you know, Paul, I know you've been lived this a lot longer than I have in regards to covering Alabama, but one thing's for sure, this has been the most roller coaster season that I can remember in a very long time, at least since about 2007. And the reason why is because after the Texas game, everybody questioned everything, and I mean everything, from the offense, from Kevin Steele's defense. Why are they getting burnt? You know, why are they throwing over the top? You know, has Nick Saban, is he not motivating these kids anymore? Then you had that terrible game in Tampa. And then all of a sudden, it all came down to your boy Lane Kiffin, you know, coming to Tuscaloosa. And right after that game, every game since then, you can tell a little bit more confidence with Jalen Milroe, a little bit more confidence in what Tommy Reese is calling, a little bit more confidence, a little more swagger on that Kevin Steele defense, something that for many years you just didn't see with Pete Golding. And Kevin Steele has brought that attitude back defensively. And that's what Alabama football historically has been under Nick Saban, has been the defense, and that has been the biggest key, in my opinion, of the turnaround.
Everything seems like it's on the line Saturday, but we've said that now about four times this year since Texas, and we may say it at least one or two more times. So take us up until Saturday night, just the mindset of the folks you talk to daily and the folks you rub shoulders with on Friday night at high school games and Saturday in Tuscaloosa. What are people, is there a level of confidence going into LSU?
There is a, let's say, a quiet confidence, Paul, maybe not the kind of Alabama swagger that we have been accustomed to over the last few years. And the reason why it's a quiet confidence is because they know football. They're not going to sit there and tell you that they're going to shut LSU down or LSU's only going to get 24 points. They know that they're going to get their yards. They're going to get their points. But this year with this defense and Kevin Steele, they do have the confidence to where potentially they can get some stops. And if they can get some stops, get off the field in third down, they feel confident enough in what Jalen Milroe and that offense has been able to do against some really good defenses in the SEC. Tennessee's not a slouch over. Look what he did on the road at Kyle Field. Milrow had a heck of a game against them. So they feel like they're going to be able to go up against that porous defense in LSU, and they're going to be able to put up some points. But the defense is going to have to show up. The defense is going to have to at least slow up Jaden Daniels in that high-powered offense. So that's where the confidence comes from, Paul. And plus, you're playing at Bryant-Denny Stadium, as we both know, a very difficult place for a lot of people to come in and to beat Nick Saban.
Shedding to Pat Smith, and one or two more on Saban. Just what do you detect? I mean, you're around people that talk to him all the time, know him well. I mean, I've seen him a couple of times, including 2 weeks ago, and he seemed a little different. He seemed a little more swagger when I saw him than even the Texas game when you could read the trepidation on the lines of his face going into that night. What are you sensing?
What I am sensing is this year's team, unlike maybe the last 2 years, they have bought in. And when I say bought in, it's the whole process. And what I hear from the people that I talk to, people around that football team, it's not that the other teams had issues in the locker room, which they didn't, but it was just the buy-in factor. And the majority of the people on this football team this year, you know, albeit they did not have that good game against Texas, a loss, they did not have a good game against South Florida, but each and every week they have built on something. And you always talk about and hear Nick Saban talking about learning from failure. Well, this football team seems better equipped to do that than the last two that he's had in Tuscaloosa. And I think that's telling Nick Saban privately, you know, hey, listen, I've still got it. I'm still being able to communicate with the young people and to try to get my message across. Whereas probably a couple of years ago, a lot of people around the program would say, you know what? He's always said if he's not getting through to the players or he's becoming a detriment to the program, that's when he's going to step aside. You just see a new Nick Saban in regards to a more patient one. That's why people started getting fired up when he started ripping players on the sideline because it took him back 6 or 7 years ago. He also understands this age of NIL and transfer portal. I'm not saying he's coddling guys, Paul, but I think you know it is better than anybody. It's just a different age now, the way that you have to go about your business. And I think Nick Saban, just like he's done many times in recruiting, he has changed with the game. He is changing himself even at the age of 72.
Having said all that, Pat, and you're 100% correct, Alabama may or may not, depending on Saturday night, get a shot at the new Alabama, and that's the University of Georgia. What is the view from Alabama about this juggernaut? Georgia is shattering records every week. They've had a couple of tough games, but they're still at the top of the heap. And Alabama, if it's going to get to the playoffs, is going to have to do it by getting by Georgia.
Alabama fans would love that opportunity, and so would the football team, to be able to get to Atlanta and have that chance. They view Georgia like they're looking at themselves in a mirror. They understand Kirby better than anybody else in the SEC since Kirby helped start the dynasty at Alabama with Nick Saban. But it's a situation where they also view this year's Georgia team as a flawed team. They also view this as not the kind of Georgia team that they had the last previous couple of championships. I know that's funny with that saying that, but it's the same thing that people used to say about the Alabama teams that would come up and play for a national championship every year. You would nitpick them to the point to where you feel comfortable that you could stay in the ball game with Georgia. They think that if they have the opportunity to get to Atlanta, that will be a ball game, and it'll be one for the record books, that it will be a very competitive game with Georgia. There's a respect for what they've done because Alabama has been there. But just like everyone proclaimed that the dynasty was dead in Tuscaloosa, I think Alabama's got a little bit more fight in them, at least for a couple more years with Nick Saban.
Pat, you've just described the personification of Alabama fans, and we sat there countless times when complete dunces were leading that program and going.
Yeah, a few of them, yes.
Yeah, but it didn't matter whether it was Mike Price or Mike Shula or Mike Dubose or anybody else. What you just said was actually the feeling about Alabama. Even then, and I think that's what's made this program so remarkable. And in relation to Georgia, Alabama wants Georgia. They're the only ones that want Georgia. Everybody else is like, man, I can't believe we have to deal with Georgia this year. And I'm glad you said that because it's hard to explain to people who aren't part of that culture what makes Alabama fans tick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing's for sure. I mean, the confidence level has always been there, as you and I have both been able to watch it up close and personal every day since 1993. It's a program that's extremely proud, and even the likes of whether it's Gene Stallings or Mike Dubose winning SEC championships. But, you know, the confidence level in this football team is also based on a lot of statistical data that will prove to you that this football team, at least on paper most years, they're going to have one of the top, if not the top, recruiting class in America. And it's the old joke about, well, it's just the next five-star up when somebody goes down. So Alabama, more than any other program in the SEC, I know others are trying to get there, whether it's Texas A&M or Tennessee, but it's Alabama and Georgia. And don't forget that Georgia was put in the same image of Alabama. That's exactly what Kirby did when he got over to Athens, and he's been extremely successful with it. But they also understand that the teacher is Nick Saban, and they still believe that if they get the opportunity to, that Alabama will be the toughest task that Georgia will have to potentially three-peat, something that someone hasn't done since Minnesota back in the old days.
And Pat, finally, I was looking at, I don't know, Kuiper, one of these guys. There's so many, it's hard to remember who did it. But there, three Alabama players are currently ranked on the mock draft in the top nine in the country. Ari Wasserman told us a couple of weeks ago that starting the season, this may have been, power ranking-wise, from a recruiting standpoint, the most talented team he's ever seen. So in spite of all the oohs and the ahs and the frustration and the roller coaster, as you mentioned, this is still a really talented team.
Very talented, Paul. Very talented. Matter of fact, when you look at some of the defensive statistics this year and you compare those to last year when you had – Anderson Jr., you had all these special pieces on defense that kept, you know, being drafted. Alabama's defense statistically is still better. I'm not trying to, you know, throw dirt on Pete Golding, but for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. But it's a situation where, yes, from a talent standpoint, even with a Heisman Trophy winner on offense, it seems like they're utilizing the pieces more efficiently than they did before. And it's taken a little bit of time for Tommy Reese to kind of get his sea legs, so to speak. But you're being able to now see some of that DNA of what he is bringing from Notre Dame and what Nick Saban has obviously told him, this is the way you need to run it and how we're going to do it here. They haven't quite had the bully ball like you expected at the beginning of the year with the problems of Caden Proctor at left tackle and some other offensive line issues. But for the most part, they've really come together as a staff, as the players, and they feel really good, especially with that roster and the talent, Paul. They got some special kids on that team. If they can get to Atlanta, they really do believe they can make some noise.
Always an incredible conversation, Pat Smith. Thank you so very much, Pat, for hopping on board. I feel like we all learn a great deal, we are in your debt. Thank you for the time. We head to the break right now.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Elliot in Ohio is up next. Good afternoon, Elliot.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to call you out on Georgia's being number one. First of all, they're overranked. Their power of schedule is lower than both Michigan and Ohio State. They play the same formula as Michigan. I'm going to play nobody. I'm going to cancel my schedule with Oklahoma, and I'm going to maybe play one or two big games a year and then put all my energy into the championship series. This is ridiculous. They are nowhere near what Ohio State has done. And here's what they're going to do. They're going to beat a 7-1 or an 8-1 Mizzou. And then they're going to jump to the heights and we're going to say, oh, what a great win. We've already done that. We beat undefeated Pennsylvania. And if the coach of Mizzou should be the next coach of Alabama, then let's put Penn State's coach up there too. This is just ridiculous. There needs to be parity. If it was Ohio State that was in the same place, guess what? They'd be outside looking in, and that's exactly where Georgia should be right now.
Elliot, you read that very well. Thanks for the call. Trey is up next. Hey, Trey.
Hey, Paul. I'd like to respond to Jim as I may. First of all, I don't let other men steal my peace, as Dabo 2.0 does. And I really don't care if Dabo 2.0 prays for me or not. I've been through so much in my life, right, Paul? Deathbed twice. I've been in the service, been in the Army. But I will tell you that the thing that scared me the most about Dabo 2.0 is when he told me I needed to watch my little mouth. Man, I mean, that really scared me. because I think I'm getting that from a guy that hit a wiffle ball off a T-ball stand and ran to third base, and the coach had to pick him up, put him on first base when he was a junior in high school. I'm not sure. But, you know, Paul, the thing about it is I just enjoy calling your show, and I told the call screener when I called in that I was fixing to steal Jim's piece. So I accomplished my goal today, and I appreciate you letting me respond, Paul. You have a great day.
Derek is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Derek.
Hey, Paul. How we doing?
We are doing
great. I never thought I would agree with Cat there, but I'm a Tiger man. I'm a Tiger for life. I always have been. And Dabo, he said what's on his mind. It's no different than what Saban, I've heard Saban rant. I've heard all kind of different other coaches rant and say, but you know, so like I said, you know, he was in a dump when Dabo got that program. When he took over that program, it took him a couple of years. He had two national championships. That's not happened since Ford. So I feel that he deserves the right to speak what's on his mind. And I agree with everything what Dabo was saying. That's all I got to say.
Well, Derek, thank you. Thank you for checking in. We've had a busy show. We had Asia Wilson on at the beginning. We talked to Dan Wessel. You heard from Pat Smith there. We still have plenty of time, though, to let you call in at 855-242-7285. One more hour. We hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.